Well, hello and welcome to this week's A Photographic Life. Just a week or so ago, I was down at Martin Parr's Foundation at Bristol, in Bristol, I should say, for a day of 90s photography, a seminar as such, with tea, coffee, cake and a lunch. It wasn't cheap to go along, but I think it was worthwhile doing. The day was constructed around a number of different speakers. Vinke Petersen was in conversation with Aaron Schumann, two photographers who've contributed to this podcast previously. Vinke was talking about her work created during the 1990s whilst she was living in a van and part of the techno-traveller community. She was then followed by a really interesting, if slightly chaotic, presentation by Stephen Gill. I didn't realise he was living in Sweden now. His work's very interesting. I have to say, not always to my taste, and his presentation didn't really seem to stick to the 90s, although it did have some 90s work in it. That was followed up by Jürgen Teller, and I'm going to talk about Jürgen in a minute. But then we had lunch, and that was followed by the work of Joy Gregory, very much, I suppose, in a way around education and a kind of independent art world, very prevalent in the 1980s and 1990s. I have to say, and I'm going to be honest here, the kind of work that put me off photography for a while, or at least contemporary art photography. But hey, we all have our different tastes. And that was followed by Richard Billingham. Of course, you'd be aware of him through Raise a Laugh and that work. And he was talking about that work again. And I have to say, knowing Richard reasonably well, having taught alongside him at the University of Gloucestershire a few years ago, I found his presentation this time actually the most informative. But anyway, I'm going to jump back to Jürgen Teller. Now, a lot of you might have your own ideas about Jürgen. You might think his work is poor. Maybe he's taking the mickey. Maybe it's Emperor's New Clothes. What's the deal with Jürgen Teller? Well, I don't think I really know, although I've known of his work for a very, very long time. And I had quite a nice chat with him at the event and spoke about the fact that I had come across his work, first of all, in an Austrian magazine called Tempo, and that was in the mid-1980s. At that time, his work was very bright-coloured, cross-processed, and he was very much of a school of photographers that appeared in that magazine, including Steve Pike, Kevin Davies and Nick Knight. All English photographers apart from Jürgen. But anyway, very sadly, at the end of the 1980s, his father died. Jürgen disappeared for a while. And then when he came back, it was the style that you are perhaps most aware of now. That kind of photography that doesn't really care about the image, doesn't seem to make much effort. And he explained this, and I thought he explained it really well, and he brought a lot of clarity to his work. And I have to say that I felt that his work and his approach to his work really was the most passionately connected with photography of all of the speakers during the day. I wasn't alone, but it was definitely a presentation that split the audience. David Hearn agreed with me that he thought it was a really good presentation. Photographer Daniel Meadows, not so convinced. A number of photographers in the room seemed to think that Jürgen had really not made much of an effort in his presentation, and I think that was true. He had his wife with him who was questioning him, and I have to say, it wasn't until the final question of the presentation that came from the audience that I thought that Jürgen really woke up and felt that he was explaining to us exactly what photography meant to him. He told the story that somebody had said to him, because he photographs everything. One of the things he gave as an example, which I thought was really interesting, was that he said to the woman in the audience, "If you gave me some flowers, I would photograph them because they meant something to me. If I just saw some flowers, I wouldn't. There's no emotional connection there." So for him, it's very much about making a record of that emotional connection, that physical connection, rather than going out to create images that others might feel were aesthetically pleasing. He spoke at length about his recent commission to photograph the Pope and how the Pope didn't require as many model releases and image checks by the subject matter as Kate Moss might do or other supermodels. He also spoke about how he refuses to use any post-production in his images and therefore he's not getting the kind of work that he used to get for those high fashion brands. Of course, unless they want to tap into the Jürgen Teller look, the aesthetic, the approach. I found him very engaging, very honest, very understated. I really liked him. As I say, I've known his work for a long time, but it's one of those examples of hearing a photographer speak that made you think, yeah, now I get it. Whilst I'm talking about that day down in Bristol, I think it's also worth reflecting on the fact that photography can bring you good friends. There are a lot of people attending that day that I hadn't caught up with for quite some time from the photographic community. As I said, David Hearn and Daniel Meadows were two of the photographers who I know and I was able to chat with, also Martin Parr, but also new friends as well. And it's always really interesting when people come up to me and say, are you Grant Scott? And I'm always a little bit nervous about that. I'm from South London after all. But I obviously say yes. And they say, well, I recognised your voice from the podcast. Thankfully, it's often followed with some kind comments about the photography that we feature, the photographers that we include on the podcast, and I suppose also the podcast in itself. One of those people who I did meet and who is a podcast listener, I ended up sitting next to. And so here's a shout out to Ian Longthorn. I said I'd mention you on the podcast. I don't know if it was just me coming late to the word or if the word coming late to me or whether or not it's an Americanization that hadn't yet landed in the UK, who knows. But when I first saw the word goat, I didn't really know what that meant. And I saw it in reference to Muhammad Ali and a huge book that was created, along with that whole series of books, I think books that were done. I think there was a Helmut Newton, an Ali, and I think there might have been a Bailey as well. Books that I think were created by Benedict Taschen, and they came with their own tables. And if you remember that, I bought the Helmut Newton one, which came with a Philippe Starck table many, many years ago, but then I sold it as well. But anyway, so the phrase goat came to me as somewhat of a surprise. Of course, we now know, and it's well recognised as meaning the greatest of all time. And I was thinking about this recently because part of the process of moving house and moving studios and rebuilding my studio, which I'm in the process of doing literally as we speak, was going through all those books and kind of restacking them, reordering and working out which ones I really need to keep and which ones I really return to again and again. And it made me think of the greatest of all time photographer. Contentious, I know, but I think that the person I'm going to settle on is Irving Penn. And I think I've been in that camp for a long, long time. The book, which to me is absolutely essential and I really kind of couldn't live without photographically, is his book Passage. It's beautiful. It's printed beautifully and it contains a really good curation of all aspects of his work. If you can't afford a Passage, because I think now it might be very expensive, you could always look out for his other book, Notebook at Random, which I also recommend. It's the one I usually turn to after I've looked through Passage. Now, Penn, where do you begin? The portrait work. The use of the corner as a portrait space, that idea of playing with the idea of space, the still life work, the food, the cigarette butts, the flowers, the fashion, the graphic portraiture. It, for me, there is no one who has done all of that as well as he has done. And his influence is so strong, particularly with his food work and his flowers and so forth. I see those being replicated again and again and again. He was kind of an interesting character. I've heard a few stories from people I know who met him and actually worked with him. They describe him as being fastidious, a technical photographer, a photographer who wanted to do things the right way. I know that he would change out of his ordinary clothes into a boiler suit to make his photography. That idea of going to work. I think maybe there's a kind of a Protestant ethic there. That hard-working nature to everything he did. One of the projects which is least known is his portraits of larger ladies, nudes, which he made, I think, in the 1940s, early 1950s. You'd have to check up on that. But that's a body of work way ahead of its time. And I suppose really for Penn, a direct kind of response to the sort of thin fashion model that he was photographing again and again and again. So I suppose at this point, I should put it out to you. Who's the GOAT as far as you're concerned in photography? No photographer joining us this week, as we're not going to do that anymore with photographers telling us what photography means to them. But over that period of time, I've certainly made a lot of good friends who have contributed to the podcast. And as I previously mentioned, I met up with a few of them at the recent Martin Parr 90s Photography Day. Few of the people I met up with there are also involved in putting on festivals, printing publications, publishing magazines around photography. You know, that real sense of independent photographic community. One of the discussions we were having was about the importance of friends, the importance of having people to support what we're doing. Because in essence, I think that's what a friend is within the photographic community, specifically within the independent sector. What I mean by independent are people who are doing stuff without payment, a bit like me, I suppose, really. I'm not getting paid to do this podcast. I just enjoy it. The problem is that it's really easy to burn out. And I've spoken to a few people recently who've had YouTube channels who have burnt out, who've got to the point where they feel that they just can't go on anymore. They just can't keep doing it. I think as photographers, we might sometimes feel like that as well. It's a big, what's the word? I suppose commitment is one of the words, but it takes a lot out of you to keep reinventing yourself and keep igniting that passion, particularly when you're working on a photographic project or anything involved with photography. I also spoke to somebody else who's involved in putting on photographic festivals. They were frustrated by the nature of the way in which the photographic community is moving and are thinking about actually closing their festival over after this year. There seems to be a number of events going on where they're all happening on the same day in the UK. Such short-sightedness is so counterproductive. Just what's the point? The reality is that the events that I go to, I seem to see the same faces again and again. I wonder if that's the case wherever you're listening to this podcast. Do you find that that photo community is actually relatively small? And therefore, the same people are buying the books, those same people are attending the events, the talks, what have you. The moment you start to put all of the events on the same weekend or the same day, you immediately kill three of those four events. The reality is that the people won't come to all of them because they can't. We need to be more friendly. We need to be more collaborative. We need to talk to each other. And we need to be more considerate. I think these are key factors for whatever area of life we're involved in. But it's definitely the case that in the photo community, it's really good to have friends and it's good to be friendly. If you engage with social media and particularly on Threads, it would seem, it's very difficult to avoid the camera brand loyalty club. Photographers who seem to be obsessed with the the particular manufacturer of the camera they use most, and boy are they defensive. It seems to me that the Fuji fans are without doubt the most vociferous and the most continual in their posting about latest softwares, firmwares, updates, models, love for all models and everything else. I'm old enough to remember that it was pretty much only Nikon as a 35mm camera. Some people might have used a Canon, occasionally pre-digital. And of course, that warhorse of photography, the Pentax, which so many young photographers used as students, maybe the occasional Russian heavy-duty camera as well. But there wasn't that kind of brand loyalty. If you're going to use medium format, you probably used a Hasselblad. You might have used a Rolleiflex, maybe a Bronica if you couldn't afford the Hasselblad. But you used what you could use because you recognised it was a tool. Now there seems to be a hatred for anybody who uses a Leica because that's just seen as a fashion lifestyle accessory. But the Fuji guys are strong. I don't see very much coming up about any of the other models, I should say, or manufacturers. You know, very few people seem to be going, yeah, I'm part of the Canon crew or the Nikon team. It's all Fuji, Fuji, Fuji. Now, I mentioned this and, of course, I was attacked by the Fuji people. Not the actual company, of course, but the people who buy their cameras. So, camera brand loyalty. What's that all about? I hope you've enjoyed this episode, a free-flowing, riffing episode. And we're going to be doing these twice a month. The first week of every month, I'll be here with Bill, and we'll be talking with the conversation, as we always do. In the third week of each month, I'll be here with Fiona Hayes, and we'll be having a conversation about stuff she's seen, new exhibitions, new trends in photography. I think that's going to be really exciting and interesting. And then in the fourth week, I'll be back on my own with the microphone, just going with whatever I think could be of interest to you and throwing things out to you. If you've enjoyed this podcast, this episode, then do please like and subscribe. That would be great. Really helps us out. You can probably tell my voice is a little strained at the minute. I think it's all the toxic fumes from the amount of paint I've been throwing onto the walls rapidly to try and get the house we bought with the word potential attached to it looking a little bit more like a house that we want to live in as a family. Anyway, despite all of that, over the next week or so, I'm definitely going to take care. And I'm sure you are too.